My name's Nicole Glinsky. This is an interview with Mr. Kelly Alexander Jr. The date is April 2nd, 2007, and this is for Dr. Flynn's oral history class at UNC Charlotte. Thank you, Mr. Alexander, for agreeing to be interviewed today. Could you give me a little bit of background of your experience in Brooklyn?
Well, let's see. I was born and raised in the general vicinity. I was born at Good Samaritan Hospital in October of 1948. The family lived on Stonewall Street, which is soon to be the site of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Our address was 415 East Stonewall Street. In my early life, was basically the territory immediately in that block and adjacent to it. We lived approximately in the middle of the block. There was a store, Ghost and Store, down on one corner of the block. Snow White Laundry was diagonally across the street and down. I recall seeing the old trolley tracks that were embedded in the street for a time. The New Emmanuel Congregational Church was about a block up from the house, and the church that my family attended, Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, was about a block away on the other end there. At one end of the block there was a filling station that was operated by
Bishop Dale.
Bishop Dale was an early politico. He was a magistrate, and at that time being a magistrate was a big deal in the community. He was also an activist in the party, and you know, there was a lot of hanging out and discussing politics at his place. Right around the corner from his place were a couple of small medical buildings, and the rest of it was pretty much residential.
Now, you attended Friendship Baptist Church?
Yeah, still do.
Is that still located down there, or has it moved since urban renewal?
Just about everything out where you are right now, and you're on Senior Drive right now, developed immediately following urban renewal. All of the institutions, the churches, the libraries, the businesses, just about everything was on Second Street, moved.
Is now off of near Betty's Ford Road?
That survived. Up on Betty's Ford Road right now, where there's a fish market. It's in, I think, the second block from the corner of LaSalle and Betty's Ford. The building was originally built by a pharmacist that was located, I'm trying to remember the man's name.
Phillips.
Yeah, Phillips. Phillips's pharmacy was located on Second Street when I was a kid, and during urban renewal, it was moved. He moved, built a building up there, and he operated there for a number of years, actually until his death. Then there was another pharmacist on Brevard Street. Again, when I was a kid, they ended up moving on Betty's Ford Road across from Northwest School of the Arts now. And you can go on and on and on and just find institutions that were relocated.
Okay.
And you got to understand that in this end of the city at that point, you were really, well, in 1951, 52, the city limits were basically at the corner of LaSalle and Betty's Ford. And everything going north was still pretty rural. So that when, you know, people started moving out here in larger numbers, this was the nearest suburbs.
Now, when did your family open up the funeral home?
My grandfather got involved sometimes after the Spanish-American War in the 1890s. He had been a sergeant major in the 1st North Carolina Colored Volunteers and had also worked with a fellow named Howell who ran the a brickyard, and I think he was his bookkeeper or something. He also was an insurance salesman with the North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company. Ultimately, he was their manager, local manager. At that time, insurance was basically industrial, and the only reason people bought insurance was to help pay for funeral expenses. So in order to sell it, you had to associate with a funeral home. He associated with the Cox and Cole operation, which had come out of the H.M. Harry and Bryant funeral establishment. They were a predominantly white operation that had been established in the late 1880s. In any event, he did bookkeeping and sold insurance for them. When the first one of the original partners passed away in about 1914, he acquired that percentage of the business and then continued to work with the other family members for a while. Eventually, when the last surviving member of that family passed away with no members of the family who were interested in the business, he acquired the rest of it. And for a number of years, it was known as Alexander Funeral Home, and in parentheses it would say formerly Cox and Cole, or Cole's Funeral Home. It was styled in a number of different ways.
Now, where was it located?
It's located in a bunch of places.
Was it ever in Brooklyn?
Yeah, for the largest portion of time, it was 323 South Brevard Street.
Wow. And was it moved during urban renewal then?
Yeah. Everything was moved during urban renewal. There's virtually nothing left in the same location except for the Grace Amy Zion Church building, which is still where it was when I was a kid. The United Community Services building occupies part of the block that the old funeral home was in, and the redeveloped AME Zion building roughly occupies the other end of the block that the funeral home was in. That block also contains the remnants of the YMCA, which was also physically there when I was a kid. So that block with those buildings in it is about the those two blocks, because Grace is in another block, about the only remnants of the original, Brooklyn neighborhood that's still around.
Wow. Now, did your family use a specific bank? From what I understand, there were hardly any banks, and
there were no banks in Brooklyn that I can remember.
Some people in their interviews mentioned a grocery store that some people use as a sort of bank.
I don't know. The bank that the business used was City National. The largest grocery store nearest on 2nd Street was operated by a guy named Dwiggins, Johnny Dwiggins. And I wouldn't have, given my age, I wouldn't have any knowledge of any banking that went on there.
Now, do you remember a lot about, holidays or special events that took place in Brooklyn? Parades or anything?
About the biggest thing I remember would be the House of Prayer annual parade. It used to go down the street near the church.
Did you used to attend it or watch? Stand on the street and watch?
I remember watching it a couple of times. But again, you got to remember, you're talking about a relatively short period of time. I mean, my involvement with the Brooklyn community firsthand was toward the end of its existence.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the houses being, now that the government used the excuse that they were blighted or slums? Is that your memory in any way?
Depends upon what you mean by blighted or slums. I mean, the government didn't spend a whole lot of money on street lights, infrastructure, you know, all of those kinds of things. So you had large areas where that was a problem, but you also had areas where it wasn't a problem. You had nice houses right next to what you'd call shotgun houses. You had structures built right up on creek banks. Much of that, the creeks and whatnot, are now in conduits under Independence Boulevard and other large streets.
Speaking of creeks, do you remember people talking about Blue Haven?
Blue Heaven.
Blue Heaven, yes.
Yeah.
No, that was, do you remember that, if it was from the, people said it was from the dry cleaning and dying from the clothes, and sometimes the creek would be purple, sometimes it would be pink, sometimes it would be blue.
I really don't know. I don't know why it was called that. I just knew that, you know, that was what it was called. Just like there was an area paralleling one of the creeks that went all the way from where Independence was cut through down to where the Charlottetown Mall used to be,
mm-hmm.
Or right in that general vicinity, called the Big Jungle. And it was just because it was, you know, you had homes living near what was basically the floodplain of the creek, okay? But there was an area that nothing was built on, it had just gone wild. And on one side of it, you had essentially black folks living. On the other side of it, you had essentially white folks living, some of whom had built a wonderful, nice little wall. It's kind of like up an embankment. There was a brick wall, you know, there, probably to keep the snakes, opossum, and other interesting urban fauna that wandered around.
So it was called a jungle?
Yeah, it was called a Big Jungle. It was still being called that when I was a kid.
What did you used to do with your friends? Would you go and play in that jungle, or did you spend most of your time in the yard or playgrounds, Pearl Street Park?
Some of all of that. As a kid, I was basically in my backyard, in my immediate block. As I got older, I roamed, you know, more around the area.
Do you remember urban renewal? About how old were you when you first started being aware of what was going on?
Well, yeah, the short answer is yes, I do remember urban renewal. I don't remember my age, and some of it is mixed up in my mind for the very simple reason that I have a degree in public administration and have actually studied urban renewal or Negro removal as a formal academic subject. So, you know, I have more information about it that I picked up over, you know, over time, and it's all mixed. You know, it's sometimes hard for me to figure out what I've learned academically and, you know, what I actually, you know, remember seeing firsthand.
Now, since you have been studying it, that's interesting. How do you view it now? Now that you know all the formal administrative aspects of it.
It was a mistake, because in the first place, it was you had this old notion of blight,
mm-hmm.
and what constituted blight, and the corrective that was being sold all over the country at that time was to remove people who supposedly lived in blight into quote-unquote better conditions. Problem was that very little money was put into creating new and affordable housing, and a whole lot of it was put into destroying the infrastructure of existing neighborhoods. And Charlotte still to this day suffers from that problem, as do neighborhoods all over the place.
So if you could change, like go back and erase it from happening, would you? Or do you think it was a learning experience?
I think that what really needed to have happened is an entirely different approach to modernizing and creating affordability. And you got to remember that part of the central problem was that areas that black folk lived in did not receive the same type of social services, infrastructure. I mean, things, simple things like paving streets, streetlights, you know, curb and gutter. You know, it was not on a par with the kind of investment that was going on in other neighborhoods within the city. That's the problem. If all of that had gone on at the appropriate, you know, level, then you would have had an entirely different kind of neighborhood fabric, and a lot of the rationale that was being spouted for moving people out would not have existed.
Do you think that one of the biggest disappointments out of all of it was the loss of such a great community? From the descriptions that, you know, I have heard and read from previous interviews, people describe just how wonderful the community was as a whole, just how close-knit.
You got to remember, I was a kid. To me, it was a community. It was where I, it was, you know, it was my experience with life and people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did not have a contrasting experience. I took it all for granted. As I've gotten older and I've studied stuff, it becomes clear that part of the problem was the what I call the Robert Moses mentality. You may be familiar with Robert Moses. He was the fella in the New York area who, if he wanted something to be in a particular place, he had the wherewithal to make sure that everything that was there before was eliminated so that the highway could go straight through. That was the mentality that drove a lot of what was going on here. It is not a mentality that permits consideration of quote-unquote neighborhood fabrics. And, you know, 50 years later, folk looking back recognize the mistakes that were made in that mentality. But hindsight is always 20/20. It happened. There's nothing we can do about it. What we have to figure out now is how not to make that same kind of mistake again, and how to make sure that the neighborhoods that exist within this community right now, that they are strengthened as opposed to torn down.
I completely agree. Would you say there are any specific healing processes that you know of that are going on? I know a lot of the people that used to live in Brooklyn still are in communication with each other, and a lot of them have been talking about, as you said, you know, preventing it from ever happening again. But do you think there's anything, especially with this project that we are trying to conduct at UNC Charlotte, any way that we could use it possibly to help heal the community and prevent any future?
Well, the basic thing, I think, is that the information that you get from these interviews that help illuminate the fact that it was a community, that it had businesses, that it had churches, that it had rich people, it had poor people, it had middle class people. You know, it was a community. It was not a ghetto in the most negative sense of the term, you know, because it was part of what was presented when all of this came to the fore, with all those poor people and how they are occupying real estate that can be developed to a higher and better purpose. And that by moving them out, we're going to better their lives. And of course, we heard the old market forces argument. An argument that we still hear today. The only problem is today we recognize that there are not that many affordable housing units that the poor can just pick up and move into. And, you know, we now recognize that there are people who may be economically poor but culturally rich, and that cultural richness has as much of a right to take hold and develop, you know, as somebody who can afford a a $600,000 piece of brick and mortar.
I think you put it very nicely. I hope everybody hears this. Is there anything else that you think you said for people to know and to say on their interviews? Is there anything that you would want to say on your interview so that everybody, you know, in the future historians that want to listen to this, or people that are involved in urban renewal modern day, would need to know?
Well, I think that in the modern terms, one of the things that is attempting to be done along the Bailey Fourth Road corridor is to, with infill development and some other things, to modernize the fabric of these neighborhoods, you know, so that we don't inadvertently make the same kinds of mistakes. What threatens that now is not a urban renewal program, but it's allowing market forces to run amok and things like gentrification to take place without some sense of how you can allow people to age in place, how you can do some things to make sure that folk who own their homes and want to stay in their homes can keep them fixed up and be able to have access to adequate services like transportation, neighborhood services that they can walk to. Charlotte is becoming an urban center in a sense that nobody understood back in 1950 or 1960. You know, back in that time, quote-unquote urban was something that existed in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles. Well, guess what? It's now Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles to a very great degree right here in Mecklenburg County. And things have changed. They've physically changed. And how you build, construct, keep neighborhoods together is changing. So we've got to, affirmatively use things like community development organizations in order to put all this stuff in place. And I think we're not going to make the mistakes that we've made before. We'll probably make some new ones, but I hope we learn from them a lot faster.
One of my favorite quotes is, history keeps repeating itself because we weren't listening the first time.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's exactly, I think, what kind of happens. So, is there anything else that you think we should address on this interview? Anything that I might have forgotten to ask you, or anything that you remember that you would like to bring up about either your memories of Brooklyn, what you can remember from the community, what it was like, the people, the Iceman, or anything about urban renewal or modern day effects?
You know, I keep running into people all the time who were kids like me, back in the old Brooklyn community. And one of the things that I am constantly surprised by and very happy to notice is how well these kids have done, doing the kinds of things that some folks would have claimed were impossible, given the adversity of many circumstances. They have successfully maintained jobs. They have raised families. They have bought homes. They have educated kids. They have maintained contact with each other. I mean, that's the fabric of the community. In a sense, you can tear down buildings, but if people have a will to do something, to build, to maintain that web, just tearing down a building won't stop them.
Did your extended family live in or around Brooklyn?
We lived all over the place.
And after urban renewal, did people or families and friends, close friends that you know, end up getting scattered, or did many of them try to stay pretty close where they moved to?
The strangest thing that happened, at least in my personal experience, was, some people were moved out in this direction. That's one of the reasons why my father and mother, ended up over here. other people moved to other places, but the key thing is that folks stayed in touch. You know, regardless of where they were, they stayed in touch. Even though there were rivalries between high schools, you had friendship groups that didn't allow that to be a barrier to communication, to socialization, you know, to this very day.
It's quite amazing how strong that community was.
Hmm?
Would you say that the community you live in now is pretty much as close-knit?
I'd say it's a different kind of community. Yeah, again, you have to remember that, you know, the Brooklyn that I'm talking about, the Brooklyn that my mother was familiar with, that was a Brooklyn that was steeped in the era of segregation when people did not have choices. You know, there are more choices now. And because there are more choices now, people choose to live all over the place. You know, I've got a cousin who lives in Stallings right now. Well, when I was a kid, Stallings was the woods. And I dare say you probably couldn't find half a dozen black folks living in the corporate limits of Stallings. It's different. It's a whole different world. And because it's a different world, people relate to it differently. It is possible right now. I've got a son who right now is in Johannesburg, South Africa. I can pick up the phone and be in communication with him instantly. That was literally unthinkable in that period of time. Distance means different things now. Proximity means different things now. Community means different things now. But what you've got is a mixture of folk who bring to this table different personal experiences, different expectations. And it's the mixture of all these differences that is creating what Charlotte, what the West Side, you know, what our neighborhoods and communities are going to be. After all, this is the beginning of the 21st century. And the Brooklyn we're discussing was a 19th and 20th century place. Now, you know, we aren't going to recreate the 19th century. We're going to build the 21st century with an eye toward the 22nd century, and none of us knows exactly what that's going to look like.
It's very true. Is there anything else that you have to say about possibly clubs or organizations, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts?
I'll let my mother talk about all of that.
Well, thank you so much for participating in the interview. I think you've added a really great new angle to everything that we've been discussing.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.